Good morning. It is time to get up with Bubba Wallace in one of the most truly moving moments we've seen in sports in a long time. We will tell you exactly what it meant. Then it appears baseball is ready to find its way back no matter how hard they tried not to. We'll tell you exactly when you should expect to hear the words play ball. And a deal for Dak in Dallas. He signs the tender. It's more important than you think. We'll explain why it was a great day for the Cowboys as we get up with you starting right now. From Bristol, Connecticut, Mike Greenberg here and delighted you've chosen to get up with us. We welcome all of you who've been watching Korean baseball here on ESPN. We'll be with you for the next 2 hours and then First Take will come your way in its entirety. We begin this morning with breaking news into our newsroom within the last 20 minutes or so. And it is bad news for Novak Djokovic. The number one ranked men's tennis player in the world has tested positive for coronavirus. Djokovic hosted a tournament in his native Serbia this weekend that was called off after two players tested positive. A third player announced he tested positive a short while ago. Novak had been seen at parties and coming into contact with some of those players. Now he has tested positive. Meanwhile, to the day yesterday for Bubba Wallace, which began with a big hug from Richard Petty, who was there to support his driver, the 82-year-old Petty, his first race since the pandemic began. And then this extraordinary show of solidarity, dozens of drivers pushing Wallace's car to the front of the line during pre-race ceremonies accompanied by the entire race field. And as you see, Bubba Wallace extraordinarily emotional as he got out of his car and received a lot of support one-on-one from many drivers, including Jimmy Johnson and others who you see there. And then the selfie that at last check, and I just checked moments ago, has been liked over 540,000 times. Bubba Wallace taking that photo and posting it along simply with the word together. It was a remarkable show from NASCAR of support yesterday. As for the race, Bubba would be focused and ready to go with 28 laps to go. With a push from Joey Logano, he would take the lead. He would hold on to that for some time. He'd finish on the day 14th, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a win in every conceivable way for Bubba Wallace. And here he was after the race was over.
I'm proud to stand where I'm at and carry a new face. Look at this. First time's right here from Atlanta. That is so cool. The sport is changing. The deal that happened yesterday, sorry I'm not wearing my mask, but I wanted to show whoever it was that you're not going to take away my smile. And I'm going to keep on going. All in all, we won today. The pre-race deal was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to witness in my life. From all the supporters, from drivers, from crew members, everybody here, the badass fan base, thank you guys for coming out here. This is truly incredible, and I'm proud to be a part of this sport.
And Marty Smith has done a great job covering this for us over the last few days. He is, as we speak, driving back from Talladega right now. And Marty, again, I think a lot of people have been moved by the way you have seen this. So how would you describe what all of us witnessed at Talladega yesterday?
I think it was beautiful, Mike. It was unified. It was undeterred. It was undaunted. It was, as Bubba eloquently put in one word, together. And it was committed. And the thing that makes him such a beautiful human being is vulnerability. And for those of us who have known him for a long time, he's always displayed that vulnerability. I've known him since he was probably 17 or 18 years old. And I've always been taken by his spirit. And no matter what anyone tries to do, as he stands up for racial equality and social justice and unity, no matter what they try to do, they're not going to take that spirit. They're not going to damage that spirit. They're not even going to dent that spirit. And what I saw yesterday from his fellow competitors was one of the rarest, most beautiful displays of respect for another human being that I've seen in some 20 years of covering this sport, and not just NASCAR, Mike. I've been blessed to be able to branch out and have more diversity in my career now. And it's very rare that you see this type of universal togetherness in a moment. And let me kind of tell you quickly how that pre-race display came together. There's a driver chat room where all 40 plus of those drivers are together in this room, And typically they would be discussing, maybe we should go to NASCAR together with this idea, or one driver's angry at another driver, and they hash that out in that room. And it was broached in that room by Jimmy Johnson, the seven-time NASCAR champion, that he was going to go stand with Bubba during the national anthem. And one by one, the other drivers wanted to be a part of something. They wanted to support Bubba in every way possible, and they wanted the whole world to see it. They wanted it to be undeniable that this is a new NASCAR. And as that happened, Kevin Harvick, the 2014 champion in the sport, won more than 50 races. He'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Kevin had the idea to, in unison, push Bubba's car to the front of the field for pre-race, all the way to the end of pit road, and that they would stand behind him during the anthem. And that's the photograph that you noted earlier. One of the most beautiful still images you'll ever see. And it was such a resounding statement by the sport, by the driving corps. And one of the reasons, Mike, that it's so beautiful is because it was initiated, facilitated, and executed by the driving corps. This wasn't some PR thing by NASCAR. This was a group of men standing behind a peer and a brother. And it was just one of the most amazing moments I've ever seen in sport.
Me too. It was unique, and it was an extraordinary statement, I think, by all the individuals involved and for the sport itself. Having gone through that here and discussed that piece of it, there is also still the outstanding matter of the investigation into what happened there the other day. What can you tell us about where that stands?
It was an interesting day on Monday at Talladega, Mike. The FBI was there. They were there all morning before the race, surveying the area around Bubba's garage. They were studying evidence and the like. I'm sure looking at video surveillance that was available in the garage area. NASCAR is not telling us what video surveillance that they have. The president of the sport, Steve Phelps, addressed the media just before 2 p.m. Eastern time on Monday to go through it. He did say at this point, they don't have a suspect, as it were. They don't know who it is yet. But he was adamant, and he did not mince words when he said, they will find who this person or people are, and when they do, they will be removed from the sport unequivocally, was the word he used, forever. They're gone. And they are resolute in the fact that they're going to figure out who did this. Because it is a disgusting moment in the sport, but I'm so proud that the sport came together the way it did yesterday to show everybody who had any level of skepticism that they are unified here and they're going to figure out who this is.
And Marty, your coverage of this has been extraordinary. Thank you very much, my friend, and we look forward to catching up with you. You drive safe on your way home. Meanwhile, let's hear from several other drivers yesterday as they shared their emotions about what happened at Talladega, including Jimmy Johnson.
And when I woke up this morning, read the news, anger, pissed off, all of that was, my blood was boiling. I could not believe that had happened. And I feel like to see the garage area stand up as they have is just sending a very strong message, and I'm very proud of our sport.
I don't want it to be remembered as a terrible day or a bad day in NASCAR. I want it to be remembered as there was an incident and we all overcame it together and showed that we're not going to take it anymore, man. I'm getting sick of this shit, and it's not something that he should deal with.
Really was a day unlike anything I can think of in recent memory. Anyway, Damian Woody is with us this morning, and we'll talk a lot of football with D. Wood, but you grew up right by the raceway in Richmond there, and so you have a real understanding of the history of the sport. And Paul Feinbaum, you covered the sport for many years. But so, D. Wood, I will start with you. As you just watched this entire day unfold yesterday, what were your thoughts?
Well, Greeny, it was a couple things. Number one, I thought it was a beautiful day for NASCAR and how all their guys, whether it was the drivers and the pit crew, everyone that's associated with NASCAR rally around Bubba Wallace. That's exactly what this movement is all about from a bigger picture standpoint. But also on the other side, people have to understand that this is not going to be something easy or something that's going to go away quickly. You got to understand this NASCAR has embraced this culture since its existence, excuse me. And so this is something that's going to take time, and it's going to take not only the people in the, as far as the front office in NASCAR, it's going to take the drivers. It's going to take everyone affiliated with NASCAR to really disavow this type of culture, this type of language, this type of racism that seems to permeated through the sport in order for this sport to truly move forward.
You know, Paul, you've mentioned many times on this show and on yours that you covered the sport for about 40 years now. If I had told you 40 years ago that there would be a day like yesterday, would you ever believed it possible?
Not even possible. I mean, Greeny, just put in context that we are sitting here at Talladega, Alabama, at a racetrack where the press box used to be named for Governor George Wallace, who was the racial resegregated governor who stood in a schoolhouse door in Alabama to block students. And I still can't believe what I saw yesterday. I think it's very possibly the most significant singular moment in the history of NASCAR. As Damien alluded, I mean, this is a sport that has reeked of racism, that has stood for everything that is deplorable in today's society. And to see all those drivers stand by Bubba Wallace is still almost inconceivable for me, who has been to that track so many times and has seen those Confederate flags and has seen so much despicable that behavior in and around that track. It was just an amazing moment.
You know, and for those who are not familiar with Paul, you host one of the biggest radio shows in the country, there in SEC country, if you will. What were your callers saying yesterday as you were discussing this?
It was a mixed bag, Greeny. I mean, there were a lot of people from around the country, obviously, who were doing what we're all doing, and that's standing up for Bubba. But you had your lowest common denominator, your conspiracy theorists out there who believe that this was something done inside, and you know, it would even pay me to regurgitate or disseminate some of the things that I heard and saw yesterday. But that doesn't matter. And as has been said many, many times over these last 24 hours, those people have been defeated. Those people are in the minority for the first time. And that's a phrase and a sentence I don't think I ever would have uttered.
Well, that's outstanding perspective on that, obviously, from one who's been around a long time. Guys, sit tight. We're going to talk much more about this as we go. And I would also like to add that on Thursday morning, so the day after tomorrow, Bubba Wallace will join us live here on Get Up, as he'll have had a couple of days to reflect on all that we've seen. And perhaps there'll be a result from the investigation into the incident of Sunday. We certainly look forward to our chat with Bubba Wallace. Again, that selfie that he took at last check, and I just checked it about 15 minutes ago, had been liked 540,000 times. We look forward to his joining us. And as we thank you for joining us this morning and getting up with us, our insiders are ready to go just after 9 o'clock in the morning in the East. And you see them there, Jeff Passan, Adam Schefter, and Adrian Wojnarowski with news from baseball, football, and the NBA. Jeff, I'm going to start with you. Obviously, it was a very busy day yesterday as the owners voted unanimously to proceed with the 2020 season after the union's executive board voted against the league's latest offer of a 60-game schedule with expanded playoffs. Commissioner Rob Manfred is now likely to implement a 60-game season set to start around July 24th, as long as players sign off on health and safety protocols and agree to report by July 1st. So, Jeff, I guess the simplest question, does this mean for certain we will have baseball this summer?
Greeny, did you just say for certain?
Yeah.
And baseball? Because nothing is ever for certain with baseball. And until the ink is dry on an agreement, I don't think there's any counting your chickens before they come home. But this is finally a step in the right direction. And of the players with whom I spoke last night, and there were a lot of them, not a single one said, we're going to pass up this opportunity. We're not going to figure out how to get the health and safety protocols taken care of. This looks like it's going to happen. Now, we've been at this point plenty of times, but we haven't been this close to say that there is a schedule that is set and there are just a couple of small steps left. So by 5 o'clock Eastern today, we should know, Greeny, if in fact we can for certain say that baseball is going to be back.
So, Jeff, based on the conversations you've been having here, what is your expectation for how this thing plays out?
I think that players want to get back and play, Greeny. You know, the whole when and where narrative that they were putting out there was a really good slogan for a little while. And then baseball told them when and told them where. And they were like, well, but this isn't exactly what we're looking for. The truth is, I think they want to, as much as they can, the players, get past these last 3 months because they've been ugly, because they have not reflected well on the sport, and because in the end they believe that the games will end up overshadowing all of those things, and that when they do get back on the field and when they do start playing, people are going to remember that they love baseball even if they hate the fighting that has taken up all of the headlines over these last few months.
Let's hope it goes that way. Jeff, thank you very much, man, and we'll check back in with you. Meanwhile, to the NBA we go, where two NBA players have now opted out of the league's restart. They are Blazers forward Trevor Ariza, who committed to a one-month visitation window to be with his son, and also soon-to-be free agent Davis Bertans of the Wizards will sit out as a safety precaution. He's had two previous ACL injuries, and he's about to become a free agent. So there's a financial component to sitting out here. Bertans, assuming the Wizards don't make the playoffs, will stand to lose over $500,000. Again, that's maybe nothing compared to what he stands to make as a free agent. For Ariza, he will lose a minimum of $1 million and almost double that amount if the Blazers wind up making the playoffs. And so let us bring Adrian Wojnarowski into the conversation. Woj, what's been the reaction around the league to these two players making this decision?
Greeny, I think a full understanding, you know, both for very different reasons. And, you know, one financial, you know, one family. And it makes sense, I think, for, you know, Trevor Ariza. He's going to give up at least $1 million of his salary, maybe more if the Blazers were to make the playoffs, to make sure that he could be with his son for this month. And Bertans, he just had a career season for the Wizards. He's had those two ACL injuries, and the Wizards want to re-sign him. I think they've got a really good chance to do that. And listen, for teams like Washington especially, this is almost a developmental month. This is a month you can play your young players. You get a training camp. They don't have expectations necessarily of reaching the playoffs, of getting in that play-in and advancing. And Portland, while they bring back some key players, you know, this is still a team that wants to make sure it is healthy and ready to go when the season starts again in December. So there's not tremendous urgency for either of these teams.
I get it. I guess the real question here, with tomorrow is the deadline for all players who choose to opt out, I don't know exactly how to quantify this, but are we expecting to be a flurry of this in such a way that it will make people look at the season and say it feels diminished or it feels somehow invalidated?
Not even close to that, Greeny. And I think you may see some players like Victor Oladipo, we reported on over the weekend, who are going to take some time to decide if they're going to play. For him, it's a physical issue. He'd like to participate. Pacers are right now a 5 seed in the East, and he was playing his best basketball before the league shut down. But here's the other thing, too. Teams may keep a lot of these players on their roster, at least for the next week or two, and not worry about signing a replacement player. There's not a deep pool of players, of talented players, who could come in and make an impact. Greeny, here's an interesting name to watch here in this transaction window that starts at noon today, runs for a week. DeMarcus Cousins, you know, he's been working out at the P3 facility in Santa Barbara, rehabbing that knee injury from preseason last year before the Lakers had to waive him to create a roster spot. Cousins is going to be, he and his agent Jeff Schwartz, I'm told, you know, they're going to be very careful about where they might commit. There's teams interested, but they're going to have to find the right situation for him to come back now, because they can give him another 6 months of rehab and preparation for next season. Wouldn't rule him out with a team this year, but it's got to be the right team, the right situation, or he just waits until a training camp next year with a with a new team.
That's interesting. Well, that could wind up being sneaky big news. Let's see where it winds up going. Woj, thank you very much. That's to the NFL, where we are now just 79 days away from the scheduled opening kickoff between the Texans and the Chiefs, and we've got issues to get to there with Adam Schefter, who's back with us. Schefter, the NFL has already advised players not to hold private workouts. Are there increasing concerns now about whether there's going to be football at all this season?
Again, I think there are teams waiting for the direction from the league, Greeny, about when camp would and should open. We have teams scheduled to report by and large on July 28th, 26 teams, and they're waiting to see whether they'll actually do that. We have the Cowboys and Steelers scheduled to report earlier for a Hall of Fame game right now that I think a lot of people no longer believe will take place in Canton this summer. There's been discussions about a shortened preseason. We'll see whether that takes hold. There are so many questions, and I think football's waiting to see how it goes with baseball and Jeff Passan's sport and basketball and Woj's sport to see how these sports work. And football's had that luxury all along. And let's keep in mind, the NFL is bound and determined and very willful. It pulled off free agency at a time when few thought it could. It pulled off the NFL draft at a time when few thought it could, and it is bound and determined to get this season done, though it is obviously up against a very difficult and unpredictable enemy in this virus.
There's no question. Look, if there's one thing that we're seeing as the common thread between all these conversations we're having this morning, these are unique times that we are dealing with. Schefter, stay close, because we're coming back to you. Now that Dak has signed his franchise tag, Schefter will tell us what exactly this means long-term for the Cowboys franchise. That and much more as we get it rolling this morning. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Get Up is brought to you by Corona Extra. Find your beach. And by Pizza Hut. Order today at pizzahut.com. Right, Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott did officially sign his $31.4 million exclusive franchise tender yesterday. The two sides still have until July 15th to work out a long-term deal. Otherwise, Prescott would have to play out the 2020 season on the tag. And note was made by many yesterday that he'd been quite quiet on social media this offseason while the contract situation played out. But yesterday, he broke that silence, sort of, posting this captionless photo to Instagram. And so as we bring David Pollack into the conversation with us for the first time this morning, I first turn to you, Schefter. No one is better than you are at interpreting the meaning of social media when it seems to be somewhat misleading. What is the significance of Dak now officially signing the tag of him posting that picture?
This means he's a Cowboy. He's a Cowboy for 2020. We don't know whether he'll be a Cowboy in 2021 or beyond. But now that he has signed that franchise tender officially, it locks him in for the 2020 season, and he's ready to go to work as a Cowboy, as that photo depicts. And in this particular case, he now will have a decision to make about whether he wants to do a long-term deal. By July 15th, the Cowboys want him on a 5-year contract. He is adamant it has to be a 4-year contract. I think Dallas is in a little bit of a tough spot here with Dak counting so much against the cap this year. And if the two sides can't get a deal done by July 15th, that means they can't do a deal until after this season, which means the idea that he could be tagged again next offseason comes into play. And that would be a $37.7 million tag at a time where the cap could be flat or even go down due to the pandemic. I think it puts the pressure on the Cowboys to try to get this deal done. And these two sides, as we know well, have talked about this deal for about a year now. They've been unable to bridge their differences. They now have a few more weeks to try to get it worked out before the pressure gets ratcheted up.
Yeah, so in the long term, the situation with Dak remains somewhat fluid. But D. Wood, in the short term, this feels like a big deal. Because with the new coaching staff in place and all of the other variables in play during the pandemic, if he had not signed the franchise tender, then he could have easily held out through training camp. It wouldn't have cost him any money, no fines or anything. And sometimes guys will do that and they'll sign it a couple of days before the season begins or something like that. So this rules that piece of it out. So D. Wood, it feels like it was in the short term a very important day for the Cowboys.
Oh, absolutely. If you're Mike McCarthy, you know, the last thing you want is your quarterback to not show up whenever they decide to report to training camp. So to have Dak Prescott sign this franchise tender, now as a coach staff, you know that, okay, I have my quarterback in the mix, the most important piece to the whole picture in the mix now for the Dallas Cowboys. So this is a team that has a lot of the same personnel coming back. They've improved, you know, on the defensive side of the football. So, again, Mike McCarthy should be ecstatic right now. The system that they have in place is similar to what they've been running the past few years with Dak Prescott at quarterback. So this is a good moment for the Dallas Cowboys as an organization in the short term.
I would say, David Pollack, there is no team that missed the playoffs last year that has the kind of expectations on them, and that would include Tampa, I think, that the Cowboys do based on the things that have gone on here. What is your expectation for the Cowboys this year? What figures to be sort of a one-on-one race with Philadelphia in that division?
More of the same. You know, I think last year the expectations were high and they did what the Cowboys tend to do. And if you look in this division, yeah, I think Damian just pointed out that the Eagles or that the Cowboys, you know, they're a team that has a lot of pieces in place, has improved. I think the Eagles have improved more. I think the Eagles are still far and away the favorites for this division. I think every year we do this with the Cowboys and we get pumped up, and some people even put them in the Super Bowl. I don't know who that would be, but some people put them in the Super Bowl and they don't even make the playoffs year after year after year. So I think the Cowboys, I expect the same of what we've seen, you know, mediocre team that's going to be average, an average team that's not going to make the playoffs.
Really? And tell me why. They bring in, obviously, your usual spot here is talking about college. So they bring in C.D. Lamb, who should provide a significant boost, we would think, going on the other side from Amari Cooper. They've got Zeke. They've got the quarterback in play now. What is it you're concerned about?
I think, obviously, you have to be concerned about their defense. Their best cornerback just leaves, obviously, and gets paid and goes to Miami, rightfully so. But when you look at this defense, I think it was a pretty good defense. This is still – DeMarcus Lawrence is still going to have to be that guy getting after the quarterback. They got – you know, Greeny, they're paying a lot of different guys between Zeke Elliott now and Lawrence and Dak. They're paying all these guys, you know, over $20 million a year in that range, in that ballpark. I don't know if they're good enough everywhere else. CeeDee Lamb, I think, is going to be great. I think Dak's going to be, you know, really, really good. This is the number one offense last year in college football. Greeny, did you ever watch this offense and feel like it was the number one offense?
I did not, to be honest with you. Sometimes when you looked at the efficiency numbers, and I don't know if those can sometimes be deceiving, but yes, I was frequently surprised by how good the numbers were on their offense.
Yeah, I don't think they're as good as we always want to sell them to be. Listen, the offensive line now, your center retires. I just think there's going to be some holes. I think defensively they're going to be okay. I think offensively they're not going to be great, but they're going to be really, really good. I think CeeDee Lamb gives them a chance to continue to be more explosive. But I don't think the offense is something people talk about it being the number one offense in NFL football. I don't even think it's remotely close to watching Lamar and the Ravens or watching the Chiefs and Mahomes or watching Breeze and the Saints. I don't get that feeling when I watch this offense. I think those offenses scare the mess out of me. The Cowboys don't.
I think that's fair. D. Wood, Cowboys or Eagles in the NFC East as we sit right now?
Right now, I have to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. I really love the additions that they've added on offense. And we saw at the end of last year, we saw an Eagles team that was depleted. I mean, they had guys at wide receiver that were on the practice squad, for God's sakes, and they still beat the Dallas Cowboys to end up winning the NFC East. So right now, I'm going to have to say the Eagles, but I still think the Dallas Cowboys will make the playoffs. Listen, everything was banked on Jason. Everything was at the feet of Jason Garrett as to why the Dallas Cowboys didn't live up to expectations. That's why you bring in Mike McCarthy, a guy who's won a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers, who developed Aaron Rodgers. So that, to me, should be the difference for the Dallas Cowboys to get over the hump and get into the playoffs and to contend this year.
Shefty, final thought.
Yeah, and Green, let me bring it full circle. We bring in Mike McCarthy, and that's why it was important for Dak to get this deal done and why he was never going to hold out and why he had to sign. Because there's a new head coach, a new offense. He had to go to camp and learn that new offense. There was no way he was holding out when he was going to be heading into a potential contract year, not with how much that team means to him. He wouldn't disappoint that area. So Dak signs, I think, in part because Mike McCarthy's there and he's got to learn the offense.
All right, guys, outstanding. We'll have much more football as the morning continues. So all of you, please stay close. But we'll turn our attention to the NBA's restart plans in a moment. One of our guys has significant concerns about the plans in Orlando. You'll hear him and you'll hear why as we continue next. Get Up on ESPN.
It's It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We are back on Get Up, and our next fight card is tonight in Las Vegas with Australia's only current world champion, undefeated Andrew Maloney, defending his WBA junior bantamweight belt against 16-1-2 Joshua Franco. Our coverage of the prelims begins at 8 Eastern right here on ESPN. It's on the ESPN app and on ESPN Deportes. And with that, as we approach the bottom of the hour, 9:30 here in the East, I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol. This is Get Up on ESPN. We'll be with you until just a little before 11 o'clock Eastern time this morning, and then First Take will come your way in its entirety. It's a busy morning with a lot of news, including the breaking news as we began this morning. Novak Djokovic, the world's number one ranked tennis player, testing positive for the coronavirus. But we turn our attention now to the NBA, where two players yesterday announced they're opting out of the league's restart. They are Blazers forward Trevor Ariza, who's committing to a one-month visitation window with his young son, and soon-to-be free agent Davis Bertans of the Wizards, who will sit out as a safety precaution. He's had two previous ACL injuries, and he is going to be a free agent during the offseason, which is this year going to come in a very unusual way. But there's a financial component here. Both players will lose some money. Bertans, assuming the Wizards don't make the playoffs, will lose over $500,000. For Ariza, he'll lose a minimum of $1 million, and it would almost double if the Blazers were to make the playoffs. So let's bring Jay Williams into this conversation. And Jay, you're a former player, obviously, and you've been watching all of this closely. Mm-hmm. What did you think when you saw these two players? And tomorrow is the deadline by which players would have to pull out. There could wind up being more. When you saw these players deciding, we're not going.
That the NBA is living in real time, a quote said by Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, that sometimes you have to assemble the plane after you've jumped off the cliff. And that's what the NBA is trying to do. And if you're a player right now, you have to look at this thing holistically, Greeny. And if I'm putting my player hat on, I understand it's a series of ebbs and flows, but I'm not sure I'm leaning towards wanting to play in Orlando right now. If you're paying attention to the landscape, Orlando Pride, the soccer team down there has pulled out of the NWSL, National Women's Soccer League. They're not participating because COVID. Their numbers have gone up on their team. You're seeing a spike that's happened over the last couple of weeks. Even if you look at the health mandate by the NBA, Disney employees are allowed to go to facilities, service players, and then go back home towards their families right now. And there's a lot of gaps here. And on top of the social injustice and the systemic racism that players are weighing if they want to play or not, you compound that with COVID-19 and the spike that's happening in Orlando. I'm not sure I want to go down to a hotspot and participate in a place where I could not only get infected, but also if my family member is there or if, people I'm allowed to see later can get affected as well. This is I'm leaning towards not playing if I'm a player.
I hear you, and I certainly understand it. And we had Woj on earlier, and he said that in both cases of the two players we're talking about here, Bertans and Ariza, that the teams fully understood their decisions and are supportive of them and all of that. But I just wonder, how much of that are you hearing from others? You broke down, there are at least three reasons I can think of, and there are probably more. There is health related to COVID. There's injury-related concerns based upon a quick restart and how fast all of it will come together. And, of course, the social justice piece of this. How much of that are you hearing from other players that you think may wind up being reluctant and may decide tomorrow not to go?
A lot of players, but Greeny, more importantly, on top of that, I'm hearing confusion. And I think I speak for a lot of people here, and I try to stay as informed as possible. I know you read a lot, too. You know for a fact that there are spikes happening in Florida. Is that due to an increase of testing? You hear reports that sometimes, testing is getting, more prone. But, it's how does that correlate? I think so many things are being politicized and weaponized that it leaves the everyday person trying to fend for themselves, and they come down to making their own personal decision. And I know that the NBA is trying to do their best job, and I do have trust in Adam Silver. If you're an everyday citizen, and if you're an NBA player, it's hard to weigh all these. What are the actual facts? And those are things that people are still conflating.
and exactly what is life going to be like in the bubble and just how secure will life be in the bubble. All those things are decisions that have to get made. But in the end, the biggest stars in the sport, it would seem, and for the most part, people tend to follow them. The biggest stars in the sport, it would seem, Jay, are going to go back and play, and there will be a restart, right? For all of these concerns, and they are valid, every single one of them is valid. They're going to restart this thing, and they're going to try and put together a season and put together a championship.
I was on a conversation with Stephen A. the other day on First Take, and we were talking about potentially moving locations. You know, if Orlando is a hotbed, could they move locations? And I know from a couple people I've spoken to, it's not realistic for them to move locations. The location is in Orlando. It's happening at Disney World, and they're going to do their best to safeguard this entire establishment, to keep it in the bubble. And maybe one of the things you have to do probably, Greeny, is if you are a Disney employee, if you are going to be on that campus, maybe you get paid overtime and you don't go back home to see your family. You are in the bubble. Once you get in the bubble, you are locked in the bubble and there is no leaving it.
We'll see how all of that winds up playing out. Jay, you'll be back a little later with Steve in the program today, so we'll look forward to that. Meanwhile, let me get to some NFL conversation here. Tom Brady, as obviously you know, has taken his talents to Tampa. So the Patriots are looking to 2019 fourth round pick Jared Stidham as their starter. He threw only four passes last year as a rookie. So these are times we haven't seen in New England genuinely in a generation, in 2 decades. So you look at Bleacher Report and their outlook for the 2020 Patriots season. What could they be? This is part of what they wrote looking at them. So they said a tank job could be viewed as a more fruitful long-term result if the Patriots wind up drafting Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields. And while that might seem far-fetched considering the team's track record, keep in mind that even with Brady, Collins, and Van Noy on the roster, the Patriots lost 5 of their last 9 games, including the playoffs, in 2019. So I see, I'm told, as we bring Tim Hasselbeck into the conversation, did someone tell me that David Pollack was shaking his head? Why are you shaking your head over there, big fella?
Big Bill Belichick's going to tank? I mean, the most competitive person, the best coach in the history of the sport that now has a lot to prove between was it Brady or was it more Bill? Like, there is no shot in you know what that Bill Belichick is going to tank a season in any way, shape, or form. By the way, Matt Castle came in when Brady got hurt and they still won 11 games. I think Bill Belichick wants to prove exactly what he can do without Tom Brady. There's not a chance that's going to happen. There is no tank job.
No, I agree. But we really didn't set up the question well there, which is to say that Bleacher Report was suggesting what would constitute a successful season for them. So with that thought in mind, Tim Hasselbeck, I will ask you, what would constitute for you a successful season this year for Bill and the Patriots?
I think a playoff appearance. And so whether that means winning the division or a wild card appearance, I think that would be a big time success for New England. They've established going to the playoffs and having double digit wins. As David just said, even with Matt Castle, even though they didn't go to the playoffs that year, double digit win team with him as the starter. They've established that as the normal in New England. And so, I think if they're able to do that with a quarterback that was drafted late in the fourth round, I think that would say a lot about, you know, Bill Belichick's kind of impact in the success, you know, along with Tom Brady over that span, you know, of over a decade. So, yeah, a playoff appearance for New England, I think, is a success.
Jeff, let's talk a minute about Stidham, because the Patriots had any number of opportunities during this offseason to make a different kind of move at quarterback. Cam Newton remains available. Colin Kaepernick remains available. They had chances in the draft to take someone if they wanted to. Jordan Love was there when the Patriots were picking and they didn't choose to make that decision. Jameis Winston was available for the longest time and they didn't. So what does that tell you and what do you hear about the level of confidence that Bill has in Jared Stidham?
Well, Green, I think it says that they have a lot of confidence in Jared Stidham, and it doesn't preclude them from still picking up a quarterback at some point before camp and bringing in another arm at that point in time. But again, what they've said to you so far is this. We believe in Jared Stidham. And you heard David bring up Matt Castle. I would also bring up Jimmy Garoppolo in the year where Tom Brady was suspended for 4 games and the Patriots went 4-0 without Tom Brady that year. And so they are used to this sort of thing, and I think they relish that sort of challenge, the fact that Tom won't be there. It will be a different offense. It will be a different atmosphere. It will be a complete different feeling with one guy who's been so important to that franchise for 20 years. It's a whole new chapter. I think that they love this. I think that there's a part of them that looks forward to this. And yeah, they're not tanking. And yeah, I think they have big expectations for Jarrett Stidham. And we'll see whether or not they're valid, right? At a time where, again, I keep coming back to the economics and the business of sport, where after this year, the cap may be flat or potentially go down due to the pandemic. Look at the Patriots sitting there paying a rookie quarterback in Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer, a veteran on a veteran minimum type of contract. They've got no money invested basically in the quarterback position, and they'll have flexibility after this year if it doesn't go well to do what they want at that point in time. But for now, they get to ride with Stidham, who I think they believe in.
And David, how much do you believe in him? We all see you cover the college game every single weekend. You obviously saw him at Auburn. What are your expectations for Stidham as a pro?
Well, if you flash back to 2017, you know, you remember that national championship game, the epic one when Tua comes off the bench. Well, remember a couple weeks before that, Stidham beat Alabama. A couple weeks before, a week before that, Stidham beat Georgia. They played for the national championship. So he was that guy. You know what he didn't do? He didn't turn the football over. He took good care of it. Now, listen, I'll say this. Gus Malzahn's offense was not close to an NFL offense, and they didn't give him a lot of answers to the questions, but you always saw the talent. You always saw that he could throw the football, that he was a really good athlete. So I expect Jarrett Stidham to play well. The question will be, he did a phenomenal job of taking care of the football in college. Can he continue to do that? Because you know good and well that was one of Tom Brady's biggest strengths, was not turning over and giving to the other team. Let's not forget, too, by the way, Greeny, you know this well. They still play in the AFC East, right?
Yes, they do.
Twice, which is 2-0. The Dolphins. So look, the Bills, I know everybody wants to buy, you know, up and coming, but you know, they still got Green in that division. They still got the Dolphins in that division. It's still a division where they're very much going to be right in the things, and I expect them to win it.
All right, none taken. Tim, let me come back to you then quickly. Who do you like to win the AFC East?
Listen, when Jarrett Stidham was coming out, I thought he was the third best quarterback in that draft. I thought it went Kyler Murray, Drew Locke, and then Jarrett Stidham, which means I thought that he was better than Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins and Will Greer, guys that were all drafted in front of him. So, look, I think he can be a really good player. The thing I would say is this, though. Just look at New England's track record of how they operate. They don't just go and give starting jobs away. The idea that you're just going to give the most important position on your football team, just hand you know, that opportunity to be the starting quarterback over to a guy that's thrown four passes and compete with a guy in Brian Hoyer, who, you know, we know, you know, how New England feels about him, and they've cut him multiple times. I just am not sure that that's really how New England's going to operate. So Adam referenced they could still address the quarterback room. I would be shocked, quite honestly, if they don't at least provide some type of competition for Jarrett Stidham rather than essentially just anointing him the starter following Tom Brady.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting to watch. Again, there's still some time between now and when that might happen. We'll take a quick break, guys. We're coming back to you as we go on. A star running back is the latest athlete using his platform for change. We'll have that conversation and more as we continue in a moment. Get Up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We are back on Get Up, and Mississippi State running back Kylan Hill led the team with 1,350 rushing yards a season ago, but he's made much greater headlines now, demanding that the state of Mississippi change its state flag. In a post to Twitter, Hill made his stance very clear, saying, quote, "Either change the flag or I won't be representing this state anymore, and I mean that. I'm tired." The NCAA said last week no championships would be held in Mississippi until the state changes its flag. And two people who cover college football for us all year long are David Pollack and Paul Feinbaum here for the conversation. Paul, what is the significance of Hill's comments?
Well, I think he's the certainly the most prominent player to come out so far and say he will not play if things don't change. I mean, we've had other players, like in the case of Oklahoma State, to complain very loudly and enact a little bit of change. But this is significant. I looked around last night to see if his head coach, Mike Leach, had said very much about the situation. And he did support his player. He didn't overwhelmingly support the player. But he added a tacit acknowledgement of that. But much like everyone in Mississippi, the presidents of both Ole Miss and Mississippi State have backed what the commissioner of the SEC and the NCAA said last week. They want that flag down.
So David, this is the first time we've had a chance to talk to you in a while, and we have seen, as Paul just alluded to, quite a few different examples of college football players showing a stronger voice than certainly I can ever remember before. What has been your reaction to the way that's gone?
Well, it's just a huge power shift. You know, listen, when I was in college, Greeny, and I was playing football, like, if you'd have told me that I ever would have had the audacity to speak out against my coach, I'd have told you no way, no how, because if I did, I'd have thought there'd have been repercussions and he'd have the power to end my career. Now you realize, like, as a player, you have a voice. You can go to social media. You have an outlet that you can plug into now that you can get your coach in trouble. And it's going to be very, very interesting to monitor, because people that are going to be at universities, and I was around several of them, that they feel like they get a raw deal. They feel like they're not getting treated correctly. And, you know, usually you're just kind of silent and you take it. And that's not going to happen. Tons of this in the future moving forward. Players are going to be able to have the right to talk about their coaches, what's going on in the locker room, all that stuff. That power shift has already been made, and coaches are going to have to coach different than they ever coached before and they have in the past.
Yeah, Paul, I think what he's referring to is just a complete change in the dynamic of power here in the sport. How do you think that winds up manifesting itself as we look at the future of the sport in issues such as these involving social justice and all the other different ways in which the conversations sort of swirl around college football with different issues?
Greeny, I think it creates a lot of problems for coaches who have run an autocratic style. And we all know who they are. They're a big number, a big percentage of the best coaches in college football, starting with Nick Saban. I mean, Nick Saban doesn't, you know, ask his players' opinions. He has a leadership council, and they may advise, but doesn't mean he has to consent. So I think it is a major moment. I think we keep using these words over and over again. This is a seminal moment. This is landmark. This is watershed. But this is, in my life, I've never heard of a player doing what Kylin Hill did. I mean, he's basically saying, you take that flag down that, in my mind, and in the mind of many reasonable people, symbolizes and reeks of racism, or I'm not playing for your school. I mean, this is dramatic. And the governor of Mississippi, Tate Reeves, is in a really tough spot because he gave a political answer the other day, which Kylin Hill reacted to in his tweet. And I think that right now the college football players in that state are going to be heard. And if they're not heard, assuming we have a season, it will be extremely interesting to see if they show up.
No, it's interesting because going back now, I guess it's 2 months or three, maybe even towards the beginning of this pandemic.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.